Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This podcast is presented by David Lowen Associates in Fort Lauderdale. If you've had a homeowner's insurance claim denied or underpaid, call 844-96-CLAIM. This podcast was presented by David Lowen Associates in Fort Lauderdale. If you've had a homeowner's insurance claim denied or underpaid, call 844-96-CLAIM. Live from the Ed Morse Sawgrass Cadillac Studios, Morse has more. Visit EdMorseSawgrass.com. This is the Alex Dono Show on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM, 96.5 FM HD2, and online at WQAM.com.
Yes! Oh, it is. It is the Alex Dono Show here on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM. Yes, friends, we are streaming on the internet, WQAM.com, on your computer or on your smartphone. TuneIn Radio app, radio.com app, however you listen. We appreciate your patronage here tonight. And of course, yeah, I got some stuff to get off my chest after the Canes loss on Friday to Pitt. Well played by Pittsburgh, and that quarterback of theirs, Kenny Pickett, he's on his way to becoming a folk hero if he's not one already. First career start. You beat the number two team in the country in front of your home fans. That was something. And he outplayed Miami's junior quarterback in the process. But if you'd like to get in, share your infinite wisdom with us via the phone lines. 305-567-0560, 954-567-0560, pound 560 on your cell, or you can text us at 56022 on the plumbers911.com text line. But please don't text and drive. You know, one of my big takeaways from that loss, painful Hurricanes loss on Friday to, you know, wrap up their regular season 10-1 instead of 11-0. This is something like I heard it talked about quite a bit on social media and right after the game, but haven't heard a whole lot on this from people over the last couple of days. I'll tell you something that worries me heading into Clemson. You know, there are a few things that would worry me heading into a game with the top team in the country. In the ACC championship game, like, I'm not going to take Clemson lightly, nor should you, nor should Mark Richt, nor should anybody. But one of the things that really worries me is Miami's punting game. I mean, when you think about Zach Fiegels, who was just a liability, you know, he's not been great this season. You would expect a true freshman 18-year-old punter to be a little bit up and down. He kind of has some trouble sometimes with the placement inside the 20, and he shanks kicks every now and then. But for many of Miami's games this year, thankfully, it's not come down a whole lot to the field position game and to the punting game. It's not to say you haven't had close games, but I think that Pitt game was a real reminder when you had some chances to pin Pitt deep and you get bad punts, and Fiegels only averaged 36 yards per punt on 10 punts in that Pittsburgh game. Very active because Miami's offense was struggling so much. A lot of short kicks, and you had a shanked kick, a 13-yarder, that directly led to a Pittsburgh touchdown. They immediately answered the 13-yard shanked punt with a touchdown. And you would assume that unless Miami shows up and can steamroll Clemson the way that they did Notre Dame and Virginia Tech, and I doubt that, neutral site and Clemson is a very good football team, and with their defense being so solid, Clemson, and being so fast, you would figure the punting game is going to be very important this Saturday, and that you're going to have some opportunities for Fiegels to need to get a booming 55-yard punt when Miami is in their own territory, or to try and pin Clemson inside their own 10 or inside their own 15 in some key moments. And if he's struggling the way that he did at Pittsburgh, if he's short-legging kicks and shanking kicks and taking too long back there and you risk getting punts blocked, that's really going to be something to watch this week. And I'm not in any way like writing off freshman legacy punter Zach Fiegels for the future. I think he could be a great punter for the next 3 years for the Canes, but as a true freshman, he's been taking some lumps this year, and he's got to be dramatically better. Like, I don't believe, and obviously you lost to Pittsburgh this past week, but if you're shanking punts and if you're struggling, if you're averaging 36 yards a punt on 10 attempts this week, I doubt you're overcoming that to beat a team like Clemson. And the other thing for Miami is, and, you know, they did have two turnovers. The turnover chain was awarded twice this past week, a couple of fumble recoveries. They didn't turn either of those turnovers into points. Two takeaways, 0 points came from it. That's another thing you cannot rely on against Clemson. If you're lucky enough, well, lucky is not the word here, because the Canes have forced 29 turnovers on the season because the defense is aggressive and fast and opportunistic. So I should never use a word like luck. They have earned every one of the turnovers they forced this year. But when you are so fortunate to force those turnovers, the offense needs to do something with it. And this past Friday, and I know it was bizarre, I know it was weird to watch, given how Malik Rozier has played for the previous 10 games this year and that he was 11-0 as a starter heading into this past week, man, to see him miss those open throws the way that he did. He looked like the Malik Rozier of his reputation previous to this year. Like, the concern that I had heading into this season for what Malik Rozier might look like as your regular starting quarterback, he didn't look like that until Friday, right? Because prior to this season, we knew Malik Rozier as somebody who was not very accurate, right? He's got a strong arm, but he's going to sail a lot of passes high. He's going to short arm some passes. Like, this is a guy who was around 50% completions for his career heading into this season. And he was, I thought, one of the two or three most pleasant surprises for the Hurricanes this year through the first 10 games. And then in game number 11, he looked like the Malik Rozier of spring football and not like the Rozier of fall camp and of the regular season. And, you know, it led to the very controversial second-guess move that was made during that game in the early fourth quarter by Mark Richt to pull Rozier out for a series. And, you know, of course, at the time, we didn't know what he was thinking. We didn't know if I had thought maybe, okay, maybe his shoulder is hurt, Rozier, and this is kind of being kept on the down low, and I'm not sure his shoulder is great at this point. But I thought, okay, maybe there's some injury here. But no, it turned out that Richt pulled him because he wasn't performing and he was trying to get a spark from Evan Sheriffs. Now, the reason why I personally disagree with that move is that so far this year, albeit in very limited playing time, has Evan Sheriffs ever shown you the potential to create a spark? Right? And I guess his most significant game time to this point was entering a game for a briefly injured Malik Rozier back in the North Carolina game, where he went 1-for-3 and did absolutely nothing and looked lost out there. So if that's the evidence, if that's the tape you have to go by on Evan Sheriffs, and obviously I don't watch him and critique him and work with him in practice every day like Mark Richt does, so maybe he thought he saw something different, but the evidence that I had on Evan Sheriffs is this is a guy who just doesn't look ready to play in a major college football game. Like, he looks lost out there, and he looked lost for the series that he played. So the issue that I take with Mark Richt pressing that button and deciding, okay, Rozier is off his game very much today, so I need to do something to bring a spark to this team. The problem is you don't have that spark on the bench because you're not burning Nikosi Perry's red shirt for that moment. I'm sorry, because I got a couple of tweets about that. People were smoking the good stuff during that game on Friday, where I'm getting multiple tweets from people that say, Dono, they should have given Nikosi Perry the spot to come in that game. So you're telling me you want to throw away his red shirt just to come into a game where you're playing terrible on the road in Pitt? Like, you want to burn, you've built up this red shirt for 10 games. It's late November, Thanksgiving weekend, and you want to burn his red shirt for that moment? I'm sorry, but I'm not sorry. That's a ridiculous, ridiculous thing to say. Maybe the people who tweeted that to me don't understand the whole red shirt situation for that guy. But Evan Sheriffs was your only option, and I didn't believe that was an option that was capable of creating that spark for you, and my point was validated there. Now, you can say that Rozier seemed to respond to that moment positively, because when he came back into the game, he did throw a touchdown pass to Braxton Berrios, and Miami tried to assemble a comeback. They recovered an onside kick. So maybe you thought, okay, that was the start of something. But I couldn't help but think throwing a clueless Evan Sheriffs out there for a series that went to a 3-and-out, that was a wasted series, a wasted opportunity to score. And I get it. Malik Rozier was playing dreadful in that game. So you could easily second guess what I'm saying to say that, well, Dono, with the way that Rozier had been playing, you know, if he had gone out there, he may have also gone 3-and-out. Maybe. But if you are giving me one possession where you have to score a touchdown, and you're asking me who's more likely to lead his team to a touchdown, Malik Rozier or Evan Sheriffs? My answer 100 times out of 100 is Malik Rozier, because he's been doing it all season long, despite how poorly he was playing. Now, I'm not bringing this up to rip Mark Richt and to say, oh, this is a terrible coaching decision. Like we're not talking about Mark Richt today the way we're talking about Adam Gase with the way his team is struggling. So you know I love Mark Richt, and I should and do give him the benefit of the doubt on everything. That just happened to be one decision that I didn't like and that I'm second-guessing today. And if you were looking for an explanation on that, Mark Richt had a very good conversation this morning with Joe Rose and Zach Krantz. And, of course, you know, Joe Rose, who is one of the best in the business, he got down to business in that interview, and he asked Mark Richt what was going through your mind when you made that move to bench Rozier for Sheriffs.
Well, I mean, Malik was struggling. I mean, I got a lot of faith in Malik, but that given day, he was just struggling hitting his target, and there are just touchdowns and a lot of yards left on the field that we just needed to hit to soften up the box to run the ball and all that. And it wasn't all Malik. I mean, we had moments where we got people open, he's getting ready to try to hit them, and we get a little line, a twist that we don't handle real good, or, you know, we got a blitz here and there that we didn't handle real good. So it definitely wasn't all him, but he was just flat out struggling with his accuracy. And I'm like, all right, let's see if Evan can go in there and hit his target and give us a spark. But, I wasn't sitting there going, he's done for the year or even done for the day for that matter. Every once in a while, you need a guy to, maybe sit a second and calm down or whatever he may need. And then on the other hand, you know, another guy can come in and possibly make a play or two and help make a difference.
So that was the reasoning behind it. That's what was going through Mark Richt's brain in that moment where he decided to yank his starting quarterback and try to create a spark with the backup. Another thing on this in my mind, and I bring this up as a positive for Richt and a positive to Rozier. I can tell you one thing, whether you liked that move, and a couple people have texted in that they thought that was the right move, but whether you liked that move on Friday or you hated it, I think we can agree that Mark Richt is not making that move given where Miami is and what Miami still has to play for, because you've got the ACC championship game on Saturday, and you still have, if you win that game, you're more than likely in the college football playoff. So all of your goals are still in front of you at this point. Mark Richt is not making that move in game if he didn't feel confident that his starting quarterback, Malik Rozier, had the mental makeup to respond positively to that move. Right, because this is a psychological thing. I think there are some starting quarterbacks out there. Like, for example, I don't know how, and I don't know if this would be a positive or a negative, but I don't know how a guy like Brad Kaya would have responded to that. You pull him out for a series in the fourth quarter, you may lose him mentally for the rest of the season. I don't know how that would work, but Mark Richt is not making that move with Malik Rozier if he's not positive that, hey, this is a player who can handle adversity. He was never supposed to be the starting quarterback here. He defied the odds, and he won that job. People thought he was just going to be a career backup. His father had a stroke 5 days before the Notre Dame game, and he went out and played the game of his life. Like, this is a player who his entire life has responded well to adversity. If I put him in a situation like this, benching him, he's going to come out better on the other side than he was before I made this move. I don't think Mark Richt is doing that if he didn't feel his quarterback would respond positively to it. And, you know, Joe Rose this morning asked him, you know, how, if they've talked about it, how Malik has responded to it, if they've moved past it. Here's what he said.
You, everybody here, it's Monday morning for you guys. We're done. We buried this thing a long time ago because we played Friday.
Right.
We got all the film knocked out Saturday, with the staff. And then yesterday we watched it quickly, but we didn't spend a whole lot of time on it because we've already got a good bit of the game plan going in, you know, for this ACC championship game. So, you know, we're kind of past it. Everybody's in good shape. You know, I did tweet out that Malik's our QB because I don't want everybody wondering what's going on, because he is our QB. And I got a lot of faith in him, and I know he'll play well.
Mark Brenner tweets to me, and I agree with this. He says, if Malik comes back and plays great against Clemson, everyone will say how smart Richt was for benching him. Yeah, I think he'll get the credit for that, because I think part of the problem with Rozier's performance against Pittsburgh was looked very casual, very nonchalant. It's like there was no urgency whatsoever in the way that he was attacking the huddle and throwing the football. And I get it. Like, I'm reading body language, which is sometimes a slippery slope, but it didn't look to me like you got the usual Malik Rozier intensity. So if benching him for a series somehow works to light a fire on his rear end, then yeah, if that works and Malik comes out and plays against Clemson the way that he played against Notre Dame, then a lot of people will be giving Mark Richt a genius-style pat on the back afterwards. Chris Herndon out for the remainder of the season. That really hurts. Michael Irvin II, now the spotlight is on you, young man. You have got to really put your mark on the early part of your career in a Hurricanes football uniform. And Irvin has come on last couple of weeks and caught some passes, but we've been saying this all year long that tight end looks like the position where you have the least depth on paper. I mean, Herndon set career highs this year, 40 catches, 477 yards, 4 touchdowns. You know, he was basically second in everything behind Braxton Berrios in receiving. He was such a big part of your offense in Herndon, who has an MCL injury. He's having surgery this week. He's out for the year. Now, the only scholarship tight ends you have left are Irvin II, who's been very inconsistent as now a redshirt freshman, Brian Polende, who's not played virtually at all, not caught a single pass, and Scott Patchen, a converted defensive end who's not caught a single pass at tight end. So you could be seeing now a paradigm shift for these next 2 or 3 games where the tight end position is not nearly as big a part of the passing game and becomes more of a blocking factor if you want to use a guy like Patchen a little bit more. But I for one, would love to see Michael Irvin II, who's on paper the best pass catcher from that group, really step up and make plays this week and beyond, because you know there's no more excuses. The opportunity is there. With Herndon out, Irvin Jr. is going to be getting the bulk of those snaps, and I would love to see a guy who's been in and out of trouble, in and out of the lineup, in and out of suspensions, and not making a whole lot of plays when he isn't suspended. This is now the time where we need him to play big boy football, and I hope, believe, pray that he is capable of doing that. So the other thing that caught my eye today, the All-ACC selections came out. I was excited. When I saw the headline, All-ACC selections route, I'm thinking, man, I can't wait to see RJ McIntosh on the first team and Jaquan Johnson on the first team. Maybe Braxton Berrios might get some first-team love this year. And then I look at the All-ACC team, and only one Miami Hurricane made the first-team All-ACC. And, you know, obviously he deserves it. I'm not ripping apart this selection. I just think there should have been close to a half dozen more. But the only first-teamer you've got is place kicker Michael Badgley. That's your first-teamer. I mean, ridiculous. Chris Herndon, a second-teamer. Second-team defenders, RJ McIntosh, absolutely should be a first-team guy. Shaq Quarterman, second-team. Michael Jackson, second-team. And I think the most egregious non-vote, and yeah, a second-teamer here, but should have been a first-teamer. How is Jaquan Johnson, who I truly believe is the best safety in the ACC and one of the top safeties in the country, how is that guy a second-teamer? Oh, because Derwin James made first team by reputation. I mean, Derwin James going to be a great NFL player, I believe, the Florida State safety, but he's not having a good year. So-so year, mailing it in for most of the year. Jaquan Johnson has played his ass off the entire season, has 6 turnovers, Jaquan Johnson, and he's a second teamer in favor of Derwin James, who got their first team by reputation. Like that to me is upsetting. I truly believe RJ McIntosh, Jaquan Johnson should have been first teamers. And Braxton Berrios should have been a second teamer at the least, third teamer for Berrios. KC McDermott is also a third teamer. So, I mean, to me, a lot of disrespect there for a team that only lost one conference game this year and a team that's heading to the ACC championship game and a team that's still alive in the college football playoff hunt. The 10-1 Miami Hurricanes, 7-1 in the ACC. They've got one first-team All-ACC player. I mean, listen, you know, I try not to play this card when it's absolutely necessary, the whole Miami football, everybody hates us card, but I think there's a little bit of that disrespect here at play when the only guy you can get onto the first-team roster is your place kicker, when you've got defensive tackles and safeties who have been just out of control this year, and a wide receiver who had a great year. And I guess Berrios doesn't have the numbers to stack up with some of the other first teamers. But if you see the way that he has really made Miami's offense go, he deserves to be better than third team. No question about that. You know who's rocking and rolling right now? The Miami Heat, winners of three straight. The last time I talked to Ira Winderman, it was gloom and doom. It was right before the Celtics game. I was waving the white flag of surrender for Heat basketball, and now they've won three straight. They beat the Celtics butts last week, and they play Dwayne Wade and the Cavaliers tomorrow. It's a good time to be a Heat fan now at 10-9 on the year. Although a member of the Heat family, I still consider him as such, David Fizdale, was very surprisingly fired as head coach of the Memphis Grizzlies today. Maybe Ira Winderman can explain why, and he can get us ready for Heat Cavs tomorrow. Ira Winderman joins us next, but I want to talk about the Quarterdeck Seafood Bar and Neighborhood Grill. You know the Quarterdeck is my spot. That's a great place to watch a game. That's a great place to watch a UFC pay-per-view fight. UFC 218 is this Saturday. They've got the high-def, flat-screen TVs covering every wall at the Quarterdeck Seafood Bar and Neighborhood Grill, and there is zero cover charge for a UFC pay-per-view fight. How good is that? Whether you're watching the big game or the big fight, the Quarterdeck has you covered. You know I love that food at the Quarterdeck. I'm a big seafood guy. The world-class sushi, the oysters, Maine lobster, the fresh mahi is so delicious at the Quarterdeck. I love the buffalo shrimp. I love the buffalo chicken wings are awesome there at the Quarterdeck. Build my own burger with tons of fresh toppings. I get pepper jack cheese, tater tots on the side. The chicken ciabatta sandwich is one of my favorites. The meat falls off the bone. Baby back ribs are so tender and so delicious. But whatever you do, when you're at the Quarterdeck Seafood Bar and Neighborhood Grill, save at least a little room for dessert, my friends, because the key lime cheesecake, that is the perfect way to finish every meal. And the 2-for-1 happy hour, that's how you wash it down. 2-for-1 happy hour all day, every day. It never ends. I love the 2-for-1 margaritas. If you want to find the location nearest to you, visit quarterdeckrestaurants.com. The Quarterdeck, come for the food, stay for the fun.
This podcast is presented by David Lowen Associates in Fort Lauderdale. If you've had a homeowner's insurance claim denied or underpaid, call 844-96-CLAIM. This podcast was presented by David Lowen Associates in Fort Lauderdale. If you've had a homeowner's insurance claim denied or underpaid, call 844-96-CLAIM.
The Miami Heat, with their three straight wins, one of the teams that made me feel better after the Hurricanes' shocking, brutal loss in Pittsburgh on Friday. Ira Winderman has covered the Heat at a high level for a very long time. He joins us now via the Toyota of Hollywood hotline. Toyota of Hollywood has moved 2 blocks south of their old location. Get there now. But Ira, I have to ask you, how much do you know about why David Fizdale was fired in Memphis? That one really blindsided me.
This is the unfairness of the NBA, that you're without Mike Conley, clearly your best player. You're struggling. You're at a down point after making the playoffs. And then you try to coach from a position of authority when you feel like in your game last night that Marc Gasol wasn't getting it done, and you leave him on the bench, and he voices his displeasure. He's a franchise icon. And then you realize, Alex, the difference between the franchises where everyone is in lockstep, like the Miami Heat, and the franchises where a player can go to someone else and say, hey, this really bothered me. It's me or him. It wasn't necessarily that degree, but that played into it. And here's the irony. It was the same day that Eric Spoelstra told $52 million Dion Waiters and $98 million Hassan Whiteside, you're not playing the fourth quarter against the Chicago Bulls. Yep. We're going to win this game without you. And Eric, over the years, has benched Dwayne Wade, has benched Chris Bosh, has benched a bunch of players in the end for what he felt was better. So to me, this was as much an organizational dismissal, David Fizdale with the Memphis Grizzlies, as it was necessarily anything that David Fizdale did or did not accomplish.
So his opportunity there in Memphis, very brief, obviously, but do you think that that he lands somewhere as a head coach for his next spot, or does he have to take an assistant job and kind of work his way back up to that?
Well, I mean, I think it's a matter of how many other coaches are let go. If you remember, last year was the first time in the NBA that no coach was fired during a season in I don't know how long. So he's the first coach who's been fired now in the last season, plus this change of the start of this season, a season in 2 months, let's say. So I think if there's significant turnover, Orlando is struggling now under Frank Vogel, how quickly do they pull that plug now? Then I could see David Fizdale resurfacing because he's very popular with players. Already Dwayne Wade and LeBron James have tweeted out, what's going on here? This is ridiculous, which plays in his favor if you're trying to recruit free agents. So I think that could happen. But if there is the kind of stability we've seen elsewhere in the NBA, one of David Fizdale's closest friends, if not his closest friend, is Eric Spoelstra. And I think Eric Spoelstra would certainly reach out to him and certainly offer to bring him back in the game. The problem is this. You're allowed five assistant coaches to sit behind the bench. So right now you have Juwan Howard, you have Dan Craig, you have Chris Quinn in front of the bench with the Heat. Would Eric Spoelstra move one of them, most likely Chris Quinn, back behind the bench to bring in David Fizdale? So you have that also. Whereas after the season, if, say, a Juwan Howard or a Dan Craig get offered somewhere else, then it becomes a lot easier also. So I think right now everyone just sort of sits back and digest this as well.
Now, Ira, let's get down to business for tomorrow night, Heat and Cavaliers. I'm going to have my Pepto-Bismol ready because it's going to make me sick to my stomach to see Dwayne Wade play against the Heat in a Cavaliers uniform. And I was happy to hear today that apparently Eric Spoelstra kind of feels the same way, saying of seeing Dwayne in a Cavs uniform, I hate it. So what is this going to be like for Spo? How about Udonis Haslem tomorrow?
Well, first of all, Udonis doesn't play. So what it'll be for Udonis Haslem is some hugs pregame.
Right.
And then maybe if it's a blowout and Udonis gets in there, well, then Dwayne and LeBron won't be in there. So it's more of a fun moment, a sentimental moment for Udonis Haslem. Here's my question, though. It'll be tough enough to stomach the two of them and the wine and gold of the Cavaliers with Dan Gilbert sitting courtside. Okay, you get over that. You knew for months now, or at least, you know, a month and a half when he signed late September that this was coming. Okay, you can deal with that a little bit easier. If they dare run one of their alley-oop plays against the Heat,
God.
If LeBron or Dwayne dares throw the ball off the backboard for the other one to dunk, to me, that will be the difference. To me, that's when, if I'm Eric Spoelstra, I point to the end of the bench and I go, okay, UD.
Yes.
With that sort of knowing look of what you mean exactly you want to go on at that moment. So that, to me, is it. Do they rub it in their face or not? Both of those players owe a lot to the Miami Heat. Just like the Heat owe a lot to those players for what they've accomplished, it was a strong relationship for the 4 years with LeBron that had faded away, 13 years with Dwayne. I'm curious how they play it out. I think every party in this would just like to get out of the game unscathed. For the Heat, it starts a back-to-back. My other point of this game is this. It does start a back-to-back for the Heat.
Right.
If it becomes obvious that Cleveland is simply the better team, and they are, do the Heat slow play it with some of their regulars, keep the minutes down, and saying, you know what, if we go to New York on Wednesday and we get that win and have a 3-1 road trip, it's all good. We come back home finally with a winning record. So I am very curious to see how Eric Spoelstra plays it out tomorrow at Quicken Loans Arena.
Ira Winderman from the South Florida Sun Sentinel joins us here on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM. You know, Ira, it was a lot more fun a couple weeks ago when I could make fun of the Cavs, but they've won seven straight. They're coming together. How much of that has come from Dwayne Wade really figuring out his role as a reserve?
Yeah, I mean, Eric Spoelstra mentioned that in the story I posted today at sunsentinel.com, that this might be the perfect role for him, that he doesn't have to go out and try to be the big scorer or fit in with the first unit like he tried to fit in with Chris Bosh and LeBron James here during the Heat's four visits to the finals. So at 35 years old, this might be exactly what they need, and you're seeing really good balance now between the starting lineup for the Cavaliers and the reserve unit, and it's going to be a fascinating challenge because Tristan Thompson still is out. Kevin Love has been starting at center. I mean, that's a tough cover for Hassan Whiteside. So what do you do? Do you put Justice Winslow on him? And did you maneuver around the rotations and maybe put Hassan on Jay Crowder? I'm really curious to see how Eric Spoelstra plays that out, or do you do the opposite and just pound the ball into Hassan and try to get Kevin Love in foul trouble? That's a very good Cleveland team, and that team is still the best team built to make it back to the NBA Finals in the Eastern Conference.
Ira Winderman from the South Florida Sun Sentinel is with us. And, you know, Ira, you had alluded to this a little earlier with Deion Waiters and Hassan Whiteside not playing in the fourth quarter Sunday night against Chicago. Who did that surprise you more for? I'm thinking Waiters. And do you think Eric Spoelstra is the message he's trying to send? How will we know if that was received?
Well, you know what? Deion was, I don't want to say defiant. That comes off as too strong a word, but he was not happy. And again, if the game had stayed close and the Heat didn't start pulling away from the midpoint of the fourth quarter, maybe there would have been a need for more Philly Cheese theatrics.
Yes.
But he was not engaged in that game. He was not sitting in the bench as a guy sort of pulling for everyone else. His legs were spread. He was slumped back. It was not a good look. Hassan obviously has the knee, so he can fall back on that a little, even though Eric Spoelstra said it wasn't the case. This is Eric Spoelstra's way of saying, I am trusting nine guys in my rotation. I cannot guarantee any of you that you necessarily will be my closer. And I went back and looked at the game book, and I did not realize until I got back to the hotel yesterday in Chicago that Goran Dragic and four reserves played all 12 minutes of the fourth quarter. Eric Spoelstra did not substitute once. That is really strange in the NBA when you're talking about having fresh guys. But Eric Spoelstra's thought was, I'd rather run with James Johnson and Wayne Ellington and Goran Dragic and Kelly Olynyk and have my reserves in there and trust them rather than bring back the starters. So, you know what? When you're a starter and you score 7 points in the first quarter as a team, you really can't say anything.
Ira, a lot has changed since we last spoke. It was right before the Boston game, a game that I had assumed the Heat would lose, and now they're winners of three straight. And you know, a player that had been much criticized earlier in the season was James Johnson, who's playing a lot better. How much has he led? How much has his improvement led to the Heat's improvement?
You know, he's the perfect example of the keep it simple, stupid kind of deal. He's making this simple play. He's seeing a matchup. Yesterday, he saw Paul Zipser on him. That is a real NBA player, by the way. He saw him on him, and he immediately took him right to the basket like one of those Bugs Bunny cartoons where you look at someone and he looks like a big steak or something, and he ate him for dinner. He is doing the smart play now instead of trying to overstate the play and trying to show that he's worth the $60 million contract. I think with a lot of these guys, they got the money in the offseason. They try to prove they're worth it. All the Heat needs to do is for them to be themselves. They go nine deep, and there's confidence now in all nine players.
Ira, where does Cleveland rank in the NBA cities you visit, and how many times can you visit that Rock and Roll Hall of Fame before it gets a little stale?
You know, I was lucky because when I was here, I guess it was last season, we got a private tour, and it was amazing.
Nice.
I mean, it is the kind of place if you're into, and you don't have to be Orlando Alzigari, but if you're into rock and roll at all, and just the original manuscripts of songs handwritten by Billy Joel and the other artists, it really is a remarkable experience, a full Springsteen room in there. I really recommend it to anyone else. Cleveland has come alive to a degree because of the success of the Cavaliers, because of the success of the Indians. Downtown is a little more vibrant. But you know what? That drive-in is dreary, and you still see the foundries and the plants and the billowing smoke off to the side. This whole Midwest thing, after I was out on the West Coast and living now in South Florida, it is a real adjustment to sort of do a trip like this. Nice enough people here, but a little bit raw for my taste.
It's funny how you mentioned that, you know, the city thrives when the sports teams are thriving. Mm-hmm. Is there any, because obviously South Florida has a whole different appeal.
Yes.
Is there any team down here that can really tangibly affect the vibrance of this city, or are we kind of immune to that?
No, I think we're so much bigger than that. You know what affects it? You know this, Alex. What affects it is the national championship football game coming here in a couple of years. What affects it is the Super Bowl. What can affect it is the Miami Open tennis tournament. What used to affect it before the course itself became a factor was the Doral golf tournament. We are an event city. The NBA playoffs, if the Panthers get back to the Stanley Cup, I don't think there's any, even the Dolphins. The Dolphins have their same loyal fans, God bless them, win or lose. They'll be out there, they'll be tailgating. The Canes in a big game is different. A good Orange Bowl could be different. I don't think it's any one team in our market. I think it's the event. We are so much more beyond our teams are up or down, and that's who we are. Because you know what? I think Dolphins fans are sort of used to it. It's not going to be so good, and we're still going to wind up living in a great place. I think it's totally event-driven, Alex.
Well, with that said, enjoy Cleveland. He is Ira Winderman from the South Florida Sun Sentinel. Ira, thank you so much as always, my friend. We'll talk to you again soon.
And I'll send your best to Dan Gilbert. Take care.
And make sure you follow him on Twitter at Ira Heatbeat, and you check out his work in the South Florida Sun Sentinel or sunsentinel.com. Doug Plagans is going to join us next. He's live in New Jersey. Panthers taking on the Devils this evening. You can hear it right here on this radio station, Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM.
Has the pier on the Toyota of Hollywood hotline. Toyota of Hollywood has moved two blocks south of their old location. Get there now. Weather brought to you by... This podcast is presented by David Lowe & Associates in Fort Lauderdale. If you've had a homeowner's insurance claim denied or underpaid, call 844-96-CLAIM. This podcast was presented by David Lowe & Associates in Fort Lauderdale. If you've had a homeowner's insurance claim denied or underpaid, call 844-96-CLAIM.
Shame. Shame. Shame.
That's what happens when you force two turnovers, you can't turn them into any points. Turnover shame. Trying to motivate these guys. I'm not hating. You know I'm not hating. But I'm trying to motivate these Canes to do something with those turnovers. So until we get some touchdowns out of these this week, God willing, you get turnover shame, not turnover chain. But folks, let's shift our focus to hockey. Florida Panthers back in action tonight on the road in New Jersey. And our man in the Northeast is Doug Plagans, voice of the Florida Panthers. And Doug, I'm so envious. Even though you don't eat soup, so you didn't try it, you walked by the soup restaurant that was the motivation for the soup episode in Seinfeld. Folks were saying great things about that. I'm trying to see the original soup man is what it was called. What was going on there?
Yeah, I was walking past the soup man. I saw a sign on the side of a building, and it kind of directed your attention toward the small storefront located nearby. And I thought, that looks like the place that was in Seinfeld. So I did a little Wikipedia work for as much as we trust Wikipedia. And it sounds like that was indeed the inspiration behind the Seinfeld, the soup place in Seinfeld.
No soup for you.
Sounds like there's actually a couple of those around the city. But I think that was the main one that inspired it, and there you have it. It was in a picture. I didn't even get on that side of the street. You know me and soup, we don't get along well. So,
oh,
but
man.
I want to take a picture. I haven't had soup since 1996, but the people who were having soup, they look, and the people who are anticipating the soup out front, they are lined up outside, they look to be excited.
Panthers and Devils tonight, Doug. Cats looking for a bounce-back win. What has to happen here tonight for the Panthers to get the W?
Well, the biggest news right now is that the Panthers will be without Evgeny Dadonov, it sounds like, 4 to 6 weeks, according to head coach Bob Bugner. So Dennis Mulgan just called up from Springfield to the American Hockey League. He has played quite a bit with the Panthers over the course of this year. And last, he's going to slide in on that top line with Barkov and Huberdeau. So he's going to get that first opportunity to step in. He's got a ton of skill. And for the Panthers, they'll need to have some guys pick up the slack with a key player like Evgeny Dadonov out here for the next stretch. But tonight, making things difficult on Corey Schneider is going to be the first objective. He's one of the best goaltenders in the business and a big reason New Jersey is the first place team in the Metro Division.
Doug Plagans, he is the voice of the Florida Panthers. And Doug, I know you didn't try the soup today, but what have you eaten up there in the New Jersey, New York area?
There's a place called Pick a Bagel that I go to whenever we're up here. And I found a Pickle Bagel location that I hadn't been to before. There's a few of them around, and I found Pick a Bagel, and I went there. And there's so many bagels to pick from, Alex.
I love that. Doug Plagans, he will have the call coming up next. Don't forget, folks, we have the world-famous Twitter segment. That'll be coming up in the second intermission. And hopefully the Panthers can get a big victory on the road today here in New Jersey. Puck will drop around 7 p.m. We'll have a short edition of Panthers preview coming up. They'll drop the puck here tonight with Doug on the call. Doug, thank you so much. We'll talk to you again in a second.
Thank you.
Florida Panthers hockey is coming your way next year on your flagship home for the Cats, Miami Sports Radio, 560 WQAM.
This podcast is presented by David Lowen Associates in Fort Lauderdale. If you've had a homeowner's insurance claim denied or underpaid, call 844-96-CLAIM. This podcast was presented by David Lowen Associates in Fort Lauderdale. If you've had a homeowner's insurance claim denied or underpaid, call 844-96-CLAIM.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.